neighbors. Welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. Thus far on the show, we've focused on food from largely terrestrial, earthbound sources. We've kind of ignored the bounty of food from the oceans that surround us. Hey, there's a whole show on fisheries in this province every day. But food is a big topic. The oceans are big. Today, we go to sea. Kind of.
Store, and the biggest part of the grocery store is that center place where it's cans and jars and boxes and things wrapped in plastic that don't look like the plants and animals that originally made our food. So connecting with our food is so important. The greatest challenges that we have today are connected to the ocean. You know, climate is driven by the ocean. We've got microplastics issues and ocean acidification. And then we've got this issue of how we're going to feed 9 to 10 billion people. And if we're not getting young people down to the ocean, then who's going to think about solving them?
Land food and ocean food. It's a bit of an arbitrary distinction, even though the industries and processes that drive these two types of food are rather different. That may be changing, in large measure, thanks to people like our guest today, who are making connections between marine foods and terrestrial foods. They're both part of the same system that feeds us. I can't keep track of all the projects and organizations that our guest is involved with. Fishing for Success, Island Rooms, Girls Who Fish, Youth Cod Fishery, Dory Club, Food First, you get the point. It's a sunny August day. We head out of St. John's to the much photographed community of Petty Harbour. Good luck finding a parking space. We meet up with our guest on a wharf, a working wharf. You'll hear some of the sounds of industry in the background and a few seagulls, just for atmosphere.
My name is Kimberly Oren, and I'm Volunteer Project Manager of Fishing for Success. And Fishing for Success is a nonprofit social enterprise here in Petty Harbour.
What was the inspiration for the educational work you're doing?
Well, fishing is connected to everything. Pretty much if you give me a subject, I can connect it to fishing.
Well, this maybe is a another good game.
This could be a great game. That's a great idea.
How is fishing related to geology?
Well, I mean, there's so many fossils that you could find within
the wreck.
That was way too easy. You know, so fishing is connected to everything. You talk to people from all around the world of different cultures, and they have fishing stories. They have, and if they haven't been fishing themselves, they have family fishing recipes, fishing songs, art. The greatest stories of humankind, religious stories, oftentimes relate back to fishing. It's something that's inspired humans since the beginning of time. It was the easiest protein to collect.
We're in the middle of a historic fishing area. And yet there's a lot of educational work that needs to be done about the role of fishing. Is that sort of ironic in some way?
It's horribly ironic.
What happened that police sort of lost sight of?
I mean, we could just look at the numbers and say that, you know, just about 100 years ago, over 80% of Newfoundlanders and Labradorians were directly involved in fishing in some way. 1992, when the cod moratorium was called, it was 30%, and today it's less than 2%. So just looking at the numbers, we can see that way what happened. But, I mean, we just don't need that many commercial fishermen anymore because the way we fish has become so much more effective. But again, it's such a deep, basic human activity that, okay, so we don't need as many commercial fishermen, but we need it for our basic human selves, connecting with our culture, with our heritage, with nature, with, you know, what inspires us to create art or music or literature, where our food comes from. You know, you go in the grocery store, and the biggest part of the grocery store is that center place where it's cans and jars and boxes and things wrapped in plastic that don't look like the plants and animals that originally made our food. And so connecting with our food is so important.
You do a lot of work with young people. Why?
That's where it starts. By the age of 7 to 9, depending on what research you look at, kids have already decided what they want to be when they grow up. So to use a pun, if we don't reach kids before the age of 7, we've lost the boat. We've missed the boat. And so getting kids out fishing, getting them in the boat, getting them to connect with nature in that most basic way of recognizing that their food was once an animal by taking them out on the water to catch a fish. If we don't do that before 7, yeah, then we've lost a huge opportunity.
But it seems like there are big challenges to get somebody under 7 onto a boat.
That is a challenge. And so it has to be family oriented. Building programs that are family or multi-generational is really important.
You also have programs focused on getting young women, girls out fishing as well.
Because fishing is also has an equity problem. When we think about commercial fishing, about 20% of registered professional fish harvesters are women. So we would hope that professions reflect what society looks like.
When you take the kids out, do they actually jig for cod or anything? They are part of the whole process.
Yeah. So, you know, getting them in the boat, getting them to actually fish. We use a hand line, so it's much more tactile. And then when they come back, they actually create a fish painting. A lot of kids are afraid to touch living things because don't touch that, it's dirty. It's slimy. So they've been hearing that. Getting kids to kind of step back a minute and just take a moment and helps them to do that. And they've also got this beautiful painting of their fish afterwards to keep, because once you eat a fish, you've eaten it. But this painting that they do, it's actually an impression of the fish they've caught. So they've got a record of the size and the shape of the actual fish that they caught. So they get a much more personal experience and connection with this fish. And then the kids can participate in the processing of their fish. So they have a deeper understanding that the food that they eat was once a living being. And I think the terrestrial folks, our farmers, are doing a better job with that. They've at least started on that with the community gardens and agriculture in the classroom and little green thumbs. And so there's been a good dent made with that.
Yeah.
But we don't have anything comparable right now for fishing. I mean, there's some program for high school students,
yeah,
right? But as I've said, we need to start younger. And so, you know, that's with this little Green Thumbs program, starting younger. Because it's also talking about, healthy eating. If you're talking about healthy eating, it's that same idea, too. The younger you start, the better opportunity you have for actually making real change.
Yeah. We've been at a number of meetings together related to food security, and you're often the one in the room who reminds us that fish is food as well, as we're eating fish at the time, probably sometimes. Is it fair to say that there has been kind of a separation of food into the terrestrial, the agricultural, and the marine?
I think that's very true, and I think it's how we can access it, because it's so much easier for us each to access our own backyard, whereas the ability that we might have to access the marine environment is very different. As I said, it used to be back when I was growing up that everyone had a mom, dad, or a nan or a pop who fished, or an uncle or an aunt or somebody, and today that's not true. As I said, today it's less than 2% of Newfoundlanders and Labradorians who fish or are connected to fishing for a living. So that's not true that we all have nans and pops who fish now, and we can just ask someone to take us out fishing or teach us about the skills and the knowledge that we need to go out on the ocean to fish. So it's a little bit more challenging. And even the numbers of recreational fishers that we have is decreasing. They're also getting older, and the young people aren't coming on board as quickly as I would like to see happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's important to encourage young people to get back to the ocean and participate in these activities, because the greatest challenges that we have today are connected to the ocean. You know, climate is driven by the ocean. So we've got these climate change issues. We've got microplastics issues and ocean acidification. And then we've got this issue of how we're going to feed 9 to 10 billion people. And the ocean just figures right in the center.
Right.
And if we're not getting young people down to the ocean, then who's going to think about solving them if they're not interested in it?
Yeah.
And you look around today on a summer day, and there's no kids around the wharf here. And when I was a kid growing up in Newfoundland, you couldn't have dragged me away from the water. And when I caught my first fish when I was 8, that was it. Nobody was safe from me if they knew how to catch a fish.
Do you have a song in mind that I could use?
Song? You're going to sing for it?
Not at all.
Oh,
or you could sing for us.
Oh, no.
If you prefer. Sorry, you're the guest after all.
No, no way. A song.
As we mused about music, somehow we got into the topic of women in the fishery.
The women's work on land was the hardest work, backbreaking work, to make that fish.
Yeah.
bending over all day long, taking it in, and then you had like 10 kids and 3 dogs,
and the garden,
and the bread, and the stove, and fetch the water, and the guys were out fishing. If the fish weren't biting, they wouldn't come in because it was like, oh, the women will just put us to work. And so the women may have been safer on land, but they didn't have it any easier. Even today, you look, and it's mostly women on the processing floor because they were on the flake. You know, it's this idea of moving women from the flake to the floor to the boat, and hopefully to the corporate room. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, how do you start that so that women's voices about what's happening with fish is not just a commodity, but fish is a food. You know, hopefully girls who fish will have maybe start having an impact.
Aye, fisher lasses, aye, it's come a war with me. Three Cairn, Balgan, Gimri, and three Inveralachie. Three Bucky and three Aberdeen and all the country roon. We're a what to gut the heaven, we're a what to yell the tune. Rise up in the morning, weigh your bundles in your hand. Be at the station early or you'll surely hate to stand. Tar plenty to eat and a kettle for your tea, or you'll maybe see a hunger on the whitey Yarmouth quay. The journey it's a longin' and it takes a day or two, and when you reach your lodging sure as soon as sleep you'll fall. But you'll rise at 5 with the sleep still in your ee. You're a watiff in the gutting yards along the Yarmouth quay. It's early in the morning and it's late into the night. Your hands are cut and sharpened and they look an unco sight. And you'll greet like a wane when you pit them in the bree. And you'll wish you were 1,000 miles away from Yarmouth quay. There's coopers there and curers there, there's buyers, canny chills. Lassies at the picklin' eye and others at the creels. And you'll wish the fish had been all left in the sea by the time you finish cutting herring on the Yarmouth quay. We've gutted fish in Lerwick aye and Stornoway and Shields, worked along the Humber amongst the Battles and the creels. Whitby, Grimsby, we've travelled up and down, but the place to see the herring is the quay at Yarmouth toon. Come aye, fisher lasses, aye, it's come a war wi' me. Three Cairn, Balgan, Gimri, and three Inveralachie. Three Bucky and three Aberdeen and a' the country roon. We're a what to gut the herring, we're a what to gut the herring. We're a what to gut the herring, we're a what to Yarmouth toon.
That's Song of the Fish Gutters by the Scottish group Stravegge. I hope that you understood at least a few of the words. It recounts the story of the women who got the herring. Today, I'm on the wharf with Kim Oren. I ask her how she first got interested in fishing.
There was this man who was at a pond outside of Grand Falls, and he was just fishing innocently, unsuspecting. I was like, what are you doing? Fishing. Yeah. What you fishing for? And trout? Can you show me? And he was like, oh, didn't know. I bugged him enough, and he says, go over to that tree over there and pull a branch off it. And so I pulled a branch off it, and he said, pull all the little side branches off it. So I did that, and then he tied a line to it and a hook and stuck a weight on it, and I caught a little mud trout, caught my first mud trout, and so that was it. The neighbor who went ice fishing, he had to take me. Someone who worked for my father, he had to take me fishing, and we had a home in Leading Tickles, and I got interested in science that way, and so I became a science teacher, and you know, taught other kids about that, and I started by teaching them what was in their backyard and what was in the water, and sponsored a deep sea fishing club and a scuba diving club. And
when you take kids out on the boat and they have that experience that you had at 8.
It's really funny. We had just before you came here, we brought a mother and her 2 daughters out fishing. And one loved the fishing, the other one got seasick. And I told her she was the bravest one in the boat because she stayed because she wanted her sister to fish. And I think they were 9 and 11. And then when they came back on shore, the one who had gotten seasick, she loved the fish gutting part. She wanted to know what everything was. She wanted to see the eyeball and the fish lens, and she wanted to hear all the, you know, the fish stories about the parts and the pieces and what they were. And the other one loved the fish painting. She just took her time at that and creating that. And the other one didn't have time for the painting. She wanted to know all the guts. And so it was just wonderful that that's what's needed, is kids learn in different ways. So present this idea of fishing, connect to it in different ways so that you snag them and pull them in, hook them, use different hooks, but hook them to fishing.
What are the advantages that we have here in Newfoundland and Labrador related to food security? We so often talk about disadvantages.
Disadvantages. What are our advantages?
Do we have any advantages?
I think we have an amazing number of advantages, but we're not taking advantage of them. So we have this Saturday, Sunday, Monday fishing thing, or the food fishery. But when the capelin roll in, they're not aware it's Saturday, Sunday, or Monday, okay? Now, it's not, we can collect the capelin any day because we're not talking about cod. But the thing is, the cod will follow the capelin in. Yeah. So if you don't have boat skills or can't afford the expense of a boat, you could subsistence fish from the shore as the capelin rolling in. You could cast out just past the capelin for cod. But you couldn't do that if it was a Wednesday, because the rule still applies that you can't fish on any other day but Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So what I'm saying is that for someone who needs to be able to have access to food, to subsistence fish, they can't do that except Saturday, Sunday, Monday. A capelin roll is a perfect opportunity for someone that doesn't have boat skills or own a $20,000 boat to be able to cast a rod out past the capelin on a Wednesday and catch, you know, a 10-pound cod. Right. So I think that's one thing that I would like to see changed to consideration for. Yeah. We talk about subsistence fishing from the shore and talk more about what that would look like. And then the idea of talking more about fish, not so much just as a commodity, which is very important, and I don't want to de-stress that, but I do want to stress more about fishing as subsistence. Yeah. And I think we need to examine more about what that would look like. What does it look like to be allowed to fish from the shore, 50 meters from the shore, any day of the week? What does that look like?
Another difference between terrestrial food and marine food is that historically it seems like marine food, fish, was an export market. And so the fishers would have gardens in their backyard in order to live here and actually have something to eat. And terrestrial food seems to be focused on more of a subsistence, local consumption. I'm wondering if that made a difference in terms of how accessible the fishery is for local self-provisioning, because it wasn't really set up for that.
I would kind of beg to differ in some ways, because people have always traded fish for something else that they needed. So if you fished for a living, you always traded fish for something else that you needed. So fish was always available that way, and fishing families always had fish, and then they put their fish up for the winter, and like you say, they had their backyard gardens. You know, as we came into that banking system and that we increased our tracking of money and changed to a monetized system instead of a barter system or trading, you know, when things became more monetized, then I think our access to fish changed. You couldn't just say, hey buddy, I'll trade you some fish for some wood, you know, because now it was monetized and we had to convert everything into money and we had to report it to some agency. So I think that's where things started to change.
What do the older fishers who are on this harbor still, what do they think about taking kids out and teaching them how to fish? How do they respond to it?
Well, we have one of those older guys doing that with us on the project because we couldn't do it without him.
Yeah.
And that's Leo Hearn, and he loves it because his son and his daughter are not fishing. And he really feels that, you know, the knowledge that's been handed down from father to son to father to son in his family for generations would end now if he didn't do something. And so he really feels very strongly that what he's doing now is he's continuing generations of knowledge and he's passing it on. And even one of the programs that we have, Girls Who Fish, he even loves to teach the young women in that program the knowledge that traditionally was patrilineal knowledge, because he feels like that needs to be opened up and taught, because if it's going to be kept in the human story, then it needs to be opened up and can't just be, you know, the story of men. And so he's helping to teach the young women in that program. And the fishermen here, you know, when they come over and hang out afterwards at the end of the day, and they love it too, because their kids are grown up and they're in Alberta or Toronto, and, you know, or they're staying home, but they're working at whatever else they're working in. And, you know, they're just glad to see that somehow the traditions of Newfoundland and Labrador are being carried on and passed down. And, you know, and maybe one of these young people will carry on the commercial fishing tradition.
For another musical interlude, here are a group of women from the UK who are all related to or work in the fishery. They call themselves the Fishwives Choir.
Dance to your dad.
That's When the Boat Comes In and Eternal Father by the Fishwives Choir. I'm talking with Kim Oren today, down by the seagulls. I started this section by asking what she thinks people want from their food these days.
Well, it's interesting. You know, many of the chefs here locally in St. John's have made it very sexy now for it to be local and traditional again, which is wonderful. And there's a big push internationally to make seafood especially, you know, traceable and sustainable, sustainable cod. And so then there's that story to be told about, too, about how we're starting to think about what our food looks like or is. And then there's also the issue about the packaging of our food. You know, the bycatch issue in fishing is a big discussion now. If it's not a fish that you're fishing for, you know, do you bring it back to the wharf and use it as food? And then the fish that you have, how do you use all of that one single fish you're looking at? How do you make it all into food or some other kind of product so that you're not wasting anything of that single fish you've brought back to the wharf? So all of these discussions, I think, are happening simultaneously, and we're becoming more aware of that as we think about these countdowns that we're all looking at right now in general about how we use the resources that the earth provides for us. I think just the other day, what's the date today? August 6th?
6th.
I think 2 days ago, we just passed the date that we've used up a year's resources. So what are we going to do the other 5 months here now?
We'll borrow against our grandchildren's resources.
You know, so each fish that comes out of the ocean, we've got to figure out how to use each part. And every fish that comes out, we've got to bring it back to the wharf or something. We just have to really have those serious discussions.
So if you were to get a phone call today from somebody in a position of power about what's a policy change that you would recommend, what would you say?
You know, the policy change that Fishing for Success needs in order to teach young people is that we need to have access to fish. Because just as the government of Newfoundland and Labrador recently opened new farmland for new farmers, so how are you going to get new fishermen or women? You've got to open up access to fishing so that you get people interested. We don't have access to fish during the fall when school is on to bring school groups out. We don't have access to it during the week. You know, as I mentioned earlier, it's Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, when summer camps are in session, or we work with Choices for Youth and Thrive, and they, the social workers, have access to the youth during the week. So our programs have been decimated this summer because we can't bring them out. We need access to fish, to handline fish, to teach young people their food and cultural heritage. And so that alone would teach young people so much about food in a broad way that I think it would have a great impact and would be in alignment with what we're teaching them in agriculture in the classroom, Little Green Thumbs. Now, as far as food production goes, I think very much what Food First is doing is huge. Talking about not just food security at the distribution and the systems level, but talking about it at the individual responsibility level. You know, what can I do as a consumer in my own backyard? And I think that's really important.
There have been changes in terms of access to fish for tourism operators and so on.
No, I think it's important to share your culture. It's the best way to connect with people, create understanding. We're not just talking about making a dollar. So if we think about a tourist caught fish, I mean, that's going to bring in $800 easy. Because, well, they've got to pay the operator, and the operator's got employees and property to keep up, and they've got to pay three meals a day while they're staying here and an inn, and they've transportation costs to get here, maybe they've got a rental car. And so then you say a fisherman brings that 10-pound caught cod, the fish plant gets 83 cents a pound for it. An economic driver for rural communities for one fish is huge. And as I said, it's a wonderful way to share culture and connect with people from different parts of the world. And if we want to welcome newcomers to Newfoundland and Labrador, what a wonderful way. Because we've had events for people from all over the world at Island Rooms, and immediately you connect with them. You know, when we first started doing it, we thought, oh, we're going to show them about fishing. But the funny thing is, they started talking to us about fishing and, you know, bamboo poles from the shores of the Mediterranean. And, you know, and they had fishing recipes that they shared with us. And we learned more from them than they learned from us.
So what's your favorite fish?
Cod. Fish. Definitely cod. It is white, flaky, takes on the flavor of whatever spice you put with it. Yeah, just the best.
What's on the agenda for you for this afternoon?
For this afternoon, we have a dad taking out his two sons fishing this afternoon, and then we have some folks who are from France, they're visiting from France, and then we have four folks from Ontario coming out today. And so these are our tourism programs, and then they pay, and we use the revenue from that to fund our social good programming. And so tomorrow is Tuesday, is our Youth Cod Fishery Day. And so those are young people from Thrive. There's a boat. And I think he's going to go out and collect his crab pots. It's the end of the season. So our Youth Cod Fishery is coming out tomorrow, and they'll learn heritage skills, and we work up towards taking them fishing. And then they'll be able to take the fish home to their families, which is really cool because many of their families are food bank dependent and they don't get fresh fish. We're also adding to that this year a first job employment program in partnership with our local fish plant, which we're really thrilled about. With the increase in the cod quotas in the past couple of years, the fish plant has really only been able to remove the fillet, and that's about 30 to 35% of the fish. And so then the rest of the fish, it's been waste or it's been sold to mink farmers. And so trying to process the rest of that fish is really just time-consuming, expensive human labor. And it's seasonal. It's perfect for young people looking for a first job. And so that we're going to be working with them and these young people. And so they're really excited about it. The young people have actually been calculating how long they'd have to work to buy a pair of bloodstones.
The bloodstone measurement. That's right.
Yeah. And one young woman wants to save to buy a ukulele and have ukulele lessons.
That's
great. Wonderful, you know, because their families can't afford those things for their kids. Yeah. And so these young people are really looking forward to it.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me to talk to you today.
On a sunny day with the gulls singing and the pungent smell of the sea in the breeze, it is clear to see why people connect to places and livelihoods like this. It may seem ironic that we need to have programs to expose young folks in this province to their own traditions, but that is where we are at the moment. In agriculture, there is Little Green Thumbs. Maybe in the fishery, there should be a similar program. We could call it something like Little Cold Thumbs. This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes or for more information, go to www.fittoeatnl.ca. The songs for today's show were Song of the Fish Gutters by Straveg and When the Boat Comes In, An Eternal Father by the Fishwives Choir. The theme music, Cluck Old Hen, was done this week by Nate Leith. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. Happy trails.
This idea of moving women from the flake to the floor to the boat and hopefully to the corporate room. And so, you know, how do you start that?